Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Jonathan de Burka Butler joins us once again. Jonathan, good afternoon to you.
Sean, how you getting on?
Right, Pakistan we're going to go to first, and they're going to execute an alleged spy.
Yes, this is a naval officer, a man by the name of Kulbushan Jadhav. He's 46 years old and he's been working with the Indian naval service, shall we say, since the 1990s. And we know that he got into intelligence in the early 2000s. He then disappeared into Iran, allegedly started a business there. And it was from there that he allegedly started operating within Pakistan. So he'd go over the Iranian border into Pakistan and would operate there. And it was certainly there that he was caught, okay, in 2016. He was arrested in March 2016. And the Pakistani authorities are basically saying that he was there aiding terrorists. He was financing them. And that is what he was put on trial for. And he has, as you said, been sentenced to death.
Yeah. And the terrorists he was aiding, was this aid coming from Iran or was it coming from India?
Well, the Pakistani government are saying that he was spying and he was, you know, allowing these terrorists to come in through Iran as well. So he's basically got, he stands accused of, you know, he has myriad problems.
A double
basically.
Whammy then, yeah. Yes.
And the thing about it is the part of Pakistan that he was in is interesting because he was in Balochistan. Now, Balochistan is in the south west of the country. We've spoken about it before a good few months back, but it's the biggest province in Pakistan. It's quite mineral rich, but it's very underdeveloped and a lot of the people there are very poor, and it's also ethnically quite different from other parts of Pakistan as well, and there has been a separatist movement there for a very long time. Okay, so the fact that he's been operating in this area makes the Pakistani believe, or make believe, okay, that he's you know, that he's helping Balochi separatists. So they're saying that he's helping, you know, to undermine the Pakistani government on various different fronts, and the Indians are helping.
He confessed, though.
He did, or at least there was a YouTube video put up of him confessing. Now, it's not clear whether that was done under duress, but it's worth bearing in mind the climate there at the moment. You know, it's getting worse and worse as time goes on. I mean, the ongoing situation up in Kashmir turned violent again just last week. 8 protesters were killed by Indian government soldiers there. And I was just having a look at this before I came in, and Pakistani media are getting very worried now that if this execution was to go ahead, that we can expect you know, big events to come come from it.
Is it likely it will go ahead? When people have received the sentence before, do they tend to be executed?
It has happened. I know in 1999 there was there was an Indian spy, again inverted commas, who was hanged, and then another guy who was on death row for about 13 or 14 years in 2013, he was actually beaten to death by fellow inmates, which makes them sound very nice, but anyway, that's what happened to him. So yes, to answer your question, in short, it has happened before.
Right, Turkey we're going to go to next, and they've detained 100 Dutch citizens.
They have, and this is something that I think they warned they were going to do after their various ministers were blocked from going to rallies both in the Netherlands and in Germany. We all know that there's this referendum coming up on April the 16th that is effectively going to make President Erdogan the dictator for life of that particular country, and it is very, very worrying, and I have to say I don't think it's really been watched that much by media because, you know, maybe in this part of the world, it's something that needs to be looked at. It's very, very serious.
It's hard to keep up with this.
It is indeed. It has to be said, but this is very, very serious. But anyway, they've retaliated by blocking Dutch citizens from leaving Turkey. Now they're saying that these Dutch citizens have been arrested for insulting President Erdogan, which is a crime in Turkey, and in fact, many people have been sent to prison for it already. I suppose what's interesting about this is these Dutch citizens, is there something a bit different about them? And I suppose there is, in a way, in that they come from Turkish backgrounds. Okay, so it's an interesting way of looking at it, because I suppose from Erdogan's point of view, he'll sort of go, well, okay, they might be Dutch on paper, but they're Turkish, of Turkish background, and they're coming in here visiting family. They're supporting Fethullah Gulen, my arch nemesis, who is, you know, handily enough, you know, away in Pennsylvania. And that's why I'm arresting these people. So that's why they're being detained there.
Mm. Well, has he any evidence they're supporters of Gulen?
We don't even know, to be honest with you, because the spokespeople from the Dutch embassy, who are obviously trying to represent these people, are saying that they have been arrested for various different things. Some of them for speaking out against Erdogan, and some of them under suspicion for supporting Gulen. You've got to bear in mind that there's about 40,000 people that have been arrested, 40,000 people that have been arrested since that coup last July.
Mm.
So people are just being picked up off the street. They're wearing the wrong trousers. Oh, Gulen supporter.
And this must be not, or this must be connected, should I say, with the spat that they were having with Holland anyway.
Absolutely, which was all about these ministers going to the Netherlands last month, I think it was. It was early March. And they were stopped from going to rallies, which was trying to get support for this referendum that's taking place, as I said, on April 16th in Turkey.
Mm. And you could say that actual spat helped the main Dutch party, the centrist party, get re-elected, because it suddenly made them look tough. They'd seem to stand up to.
It did. I know that Mark Rutte, because I was over there just shortly after it happened, and I know that Mark Rutte got a bit of a bounce as a result, and because he took that stance. And, you know, so it did help him a little bit, I think.
Yes, which probably was not the result they were looking for, actually. Kuwait, we're going to go to next. And, this is an odd one. This is a video of a woman. Is she trying to take her own life or not?
Well, this is what the authorities are now trying to establish. I take it from your tone that you've probably seen the video. It's quite shocking. It's only about 18 seconds long, but it shows a woman. She's an Ethiopian woman. She's a maid working in Kuwait, and she's dangling from a seventh floor window. Okay, and all we can see basically is somebody taking a shot of her. She's saying, "Help me, help me." And the next thing, she slips. And what's weird about this is that the person shooting the video actually follows her as she goes down the seven flights and then hits a kind of a corrugated, the type of thing that you'd put on a shed, you know, kind of tin roof. And that actually stopped her fall. She survived and was taken to hospital with a broken arm and some internal bleeding. Now, she said when she was interviewed shortly after that she wasn't in fact trying to commit suicide, even though it was initially reported in some Kuwaiti papers or by some Kuwaiti press that she was.
Mm.
She says that she was trying to escape from her employer, who was treating her very badly. And that employer, who shot the video as well,
right,
okay, has been arrested for not coming to the aid of this particular maid. Now, if you look at the video, what she could have done, it's very hard to know. But why was she shooting a video rather than, you know, trying to get to the window to
and
grab her?
Why was this woman hanging out of a seventh floor window?
Well, this is what we don't know. There's one side that says she's trying to commit suicide. The other is that she's trying to get away from her employer. That's what she says.
Yeah.
Because somebody went to hospital afterwards and took a video of her saying, "No, I was trying to get away from my employer who was trying to kill me."
Mm. Right. Hopefully the actual facts of the case will come out in due time. Now, Uganda we're going to next. And the government has stopped an opposition party. Is it the opposition party who are attempting to give food aid?
Yes. So this is Kizza Besigye, who is the leader of the Forum for Democratic Change. Now, he is the thorn in the side of Museveni, who's been there since 1986. Now, Besigye has gone for election and run against Museveni four times and lost all four times, most recently in 2016. But he's done all right when you consider that Museveni has, you know, basically controls the election. So in the last election, he got 35% of the votes. He, of course, declared that the polls were rigged and denounced the president. He was put under house arrest because of that. But there's a bit of a propaganda thing going on between the two of them. So the economy in Uganda isn't going particularly well at the moment, and Besigye and his party are trying to use that by giving food aid out in various different parts of the country where his support is strongest, it should be said.
Yeah.
So this happened in the northeast of the country in a place called Tarama County. But the police intervened and they stopped them from handing out the food packages. And there was a riot and tear gas was used and two people ended up getting injured. Very strange set of circumstances. But it's all very strange at the moment in Uganda, it should be said.
Right. But I assume, though, the opposition party handing out food aid makes Museveni's government look bad.
Exactly.
So that's why they'd wanted to.
Exactly. And the food was needed because it appears that people are starving in certain parts of Uganda at the moment.
Right. Okay. And so the government hasn't stepped in and said, we'll give you food instead.
What the police actually said in this case is that they weren't sure that the food wasn't contaminated, which seems to be an absolutely absurd sort of premise on which to stop food aid being handed out. But that's what they said.
But I think the government aren't going to divert funds, isn't it, from building roads or something.
That's what they're saying they're going to do. So this is the announcement. But Museveni is the master of the photo opportunity. They also say, in another development, they also say that they're going to hold talks, or there are talks about talks, to look at that 2016 election, which was allegedly rigged. But one side is saying another. But we'll get back to it another time, maybe.
Yes. Right, okay, Gambia. And the new president's party has done rather well there.
Yes, this is Adama Barrow, an interesting guy. He studied at the London School of Economics, and he worked as a security guard for Boots or something like that while he was there. But anyway, he has since gone on to become president, and his party has done quite well in the National Assembly elections there, the United Democratic Party. They won 31 seats of the 53-seat National Assembly. Now, when you consider that in the last election that was held, the party of Yahya Jammeh, who was there for 22 years and has since January gone, that party won 48 seats and now only won 5. It's a considerable turnabout in the state of that particular country. So it's an interesting development, and again, it's something to be watched to see now that Adama Barrow has a mandate to go on with the reforms that he wants to carry out.
Yeah, and Jammeh is not in the country anymore, is he?
No, I don't know where he's gone, but he's not in the country anymore. He was hanging on for a while, but he is gone now.
Yeah, he didn't want to accept the result.
Yes, and critically, there was a few in the army who were scratching their chin as well. And eventually, interestingly, what happened was there that I think Senegal, who seemed to be the big dog in that region, started getting on everybody else's back and saying, "Look, we'll take action here if you don't get out." And the pressure was successful.
Yeah, and now and given that Jammeh's party only won 5 seats, that would kind of indicate, because often in these kind of post-dictator situations, there's still a division in that there's a rump of people who are loyal to him, and it doesn't indicate that there were a very large rump of people who were loyal to him.
Indeed, it's a very good point. Now, it should be, there's two things to say about that. The turnout was quite low compared to the presidential election, so there's some speculation that people were just, they want to get rid of Jammeh, and then they weren't interested who came in after that. But yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah, okay. French Guiana we're going to next. Now, I mean, Gambia's got a population of 1.8 million. It's a tiny wee place. French Guiana, only a population of how much? Quarter of a million.
Even
smaller, but they're having protests.
They are, and it's an interesting place because it's actually part of France and it's in the European Union. Because of that, I suppose.
I didn't know it was in the European Union.
Yeah,
that's
it is. Because this is part of the problem, because they're having major economic problems and they could be getting their oil and all sorts of different things from Brazil and Suriname right beside it, but they can't because they're tied into sort of European Union laws. And so for that reason, it makes that part of the world 12% more expensive than the rest of France, even though they don't do as well, you know, in terms of their income as the rest of France. But that said, they do better than most of the rest of South America. But anyway, they're not happy. And there's a few things to say about that. The few things that triggered it off. Basically, it's becoming more and more dangerous to live there. The murder rate has increased. And back in August of 2016, a senior patient at a hospital in the capital, he died in a fire in his bedroom. An absolutely bizarre and very grim set of circumstances. It was also discovered that four babies died in the same hospital. So There's been a perfect storm here, and it's brought people out onto the streets. They feel they've been neglected by the French, and they've effectively brought the place to a standstill.
Yeah.
They actually took over the space station there, and it meant that the European Space Agency weren't able to launch a rocket from it, or it was delayed.
Mm.
But they have since moved out.
Yeah, so. And would that be French Guiana's basically only industry
is
launching
really.
Rockets for Europe?
It is really, yeah. And, you know, it is, as I said, in French terms, it's quite poor and the schools are dilapidated. So they're looking for money. And they were looking for about $1 billion of an investment. But as time went on and as the French said, no, we won't give you that, they've ramped it up and they're now looking for 2.2 billion, I think, euros. They've been offered the 1 billion,
mm.
but the protesters are saying, well, we've got them on the run now, so we may as well double our money. Yeah.
And what are they going to do with these billions if or when they get them?
Invested in infrastructure. The big thing here is education and hospitals. That's what they're annoyed about. And also the increase in crime.
Mm. Isn't there a kind of an unofficial industry and people panning for gold? And
there is, yeah, and I think that's another problem because that causes environmental problems as well. But also, I think they mine something like, is it 10 tons of the stuff? But only about 2 tons is actually accounted for. So there's a big sort of dodgy industry going on there as well.
Kind of mined privately.
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry, I was there once years ago.
Really?
Best journalist junket I ever got. Was, because New York normally it's like, do you want to come along to, you know, a room in a hotel and get a free glass of wine and a bag of peanuts? It was to fly to French Guiana to look at the Ariane rocket being rolled out from onto its launch bay.
Brilliant.
Which was actually slightly disappointing because their mission control is just like a fat bloke in a room with a telephone.
How long were you there for, can I ask you?
Like 2 nights.
Okay.
That was it. It was very crumbly and kind of charming. But I suppose living there is a different thing. And,
it depends on who you're comparing it to. To the rest of South America, they're doing okay. I mean, it's 15,000 euros per person.
And Devil's Island is off the coast of there as well.
Papillon
and all that.
Great
movie. That was a big tourist attraction there. Right, okay. Australia we're going to next. And the poor straits for Aussie millennials, or at least financial straits that they're in.
Yeah, in the Twitter, the tweet that I sent out, I said that I fear more for their parents, to be honest with you, because only 28% of Australians aged between 18 and 36 own their own home or own the home they live in at the moment, which is quite worrying. Now, this is a study that was carried out by HSBC, and I should say that the headline caught me out here in a big way because it said that they were the second least likely in the world to own their own home. But it was only 9 countries, in fact, that the HSBC...
Very small world.
World indeed. But it might go back to what your texter say. It was very much first world problems here that they were looking at. So apparently Chinese millennials are the biggest homeowners, 70%. And then Malaysia comes after that. The UK is 31% of millennials own their own home. But the Australians are way down on 28%.
Yeah.
So problems for them.
Though that would seem to be kind of a generalized Western world problem, that millennials aren't as well off at the same age as probably their parents were.
Yeah, indeed. And that's the point they're making here. They're also saying that the Australian capital, that city house prices rose by 10% in the past 12 months. And of course, at the same time, wages aren't going up by anywhere near that amount. So, yeah, it's a problem across the board and even in Australia.
Yeah. Right. Okay. The Korean Peninsula we're going to go to next. Now, obviously, there are increased tensions there with rocket launches and warships steaming in that direction, all the rest of it. But one little spark of good news, certainly on the football field.
Yes, 40,000 people turned up at a stadium in Pyongyang last Friday. Excuse me, to see the two countries' women's football teams play against each other. They played the national anthems. Apparently the North Koreans stood for the South Korean anthem and everything was like Croke Park. It was all very respectful and that kind of thing. And the game went off without any major incidents. It was a draw, as far as I know. I don't know whether it was 0-0 or 1-1. I can't remember the result, but it's important that it was a draw. I suppose it's a good thing. It's a simple story, but it's a good thing.
Yeah.
There are people who are there making efforts to bring the two sides together.
Yeah. And was the match played in the north or the south?
It was played in the north, yeah.
Right, okay. And so there would have been... oh, crikey. Hope the North Koreans won, or there might be a completely reformed football team by now.
It was a draw, so
it was
okay.
A draw. Yeah, but it'll be reported as 10-0, no doubt, in the North Korean media. Have they played before with each other?
The women's football team haven't played before. I think they might have played. The men's team played in 1990, which North Korea won 2-1.
Right. Okay. So it's actually then not that often are there sporting links between the two parts of the peninsula.
No, no.
Unfortunately. Right. Okay. What kind of things should be looking out for over the next week or so, Jonathan?
Yeah. Malala Yousafzai is, I hope I got her name right, is going to Canada next week, and she's going to get the Freedom of Toronto. I think she's addressing Parliament on April the 12th. So that might be something that will be get the and finally news slots. April the 12th also in Bihar. In India, 40,000 medicine shops are going to shut down. Now, they're annoyed about the fact that the government have said that all medicine shops or pharmacies are going to have to be licensed properly and have proper pharmacists attending. These guys are pointing out that, you know, they don't really sell compounds of chemicals anymore, really, in the way that they used to, so that there's no need for them. So apparently lots of them are operating without a license, and they're not happy about this new decision. So there you go. Mm. And then on April the 14th, Ocean City in New Jersey, I don't know if that some people went there on their J1 visa, is going to host a Coffee with a Cop event, which should be pretty interesting. You can go along and tell the police what your problems are.
Right. And is that to try and kind of re-establish good relations between the community and cops, or is it generally to do with coffee?
I think it's to try and re-establish good relations between the local police and the public. It's there for the public to go and tell the police what's wrong. Yeah. Maybe get a few things knocked off their penalty points and see whatever else they can get.
As long as they have genuine penalty points, which you don't have in this country. Jonathan, thanks a million for coming into us. Jonathan DeBurke Butler there.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas